Masechta Tainis, Daf Chof Beis Amar Aleph, Toises Tiri Maschil, Torfa Shnei Bnei Adam, Achla Echad Mehem Mishulachas. To review the background of the Gemara discusses, based on the Mishnah, that we declare fast days on Chayara, on animals that either are killing people or even are seen. So the Gemara gives a Klal Gadol, a general rule and principle, that anything that is natural for animal behavior, even if it leads to tragic results, such as animals attacking and eating people, is not necessarily something that you declare fast days on. It's only when it's what's called mishulachas, that it is acting in an unusual way for an animal, and therefore we view it as a gzeira min hashamayim, as sent from heaven, and therefore there to awaken us to tshuva. Interesting hashkafic issue that this raises, that when we follow the Torah, we're supposed to be protected even from quote-unquote natural disasters. So that's a broader topic which we're not going to get into now. So the Gemara gets involved in all kinds of sub-cases in the original animal habitat. It's called the Agam, a field that's near the Agam, a city, what's considered usual for the animal to appear during the day, at night, to run away, to run toward. And one of the many sub-cases that the Gemara discusses that distinguishes between a natural phenomenon on which one does not declare a fast day and an unusual phenomenon which one does is the Dibur Maschil of Tosfos, Tarfa Shnei Bnei Adam, Achla Echad Mehem Mishulachas, that if an animal kills two people and eats only one of them, so that indicates that it is sent min hashamayim, and it's a terrible gzera. In the full presentation of the Gemara, not all of which Tosfos quote, the Gemara says that if the animal killed two people and ate both people, then that's considered a natural consequence, which would not necessitate fasting. But if it killed both people and ate only one of them, so that's mishulachas, which would require a fast day. What the Gemara leaves unexplicated is what if it killed both of them and ate neither of them. So that's what Tosfos picks up on. Hu adin, say Tosfos, lo achla echad mehem mishulachas, that even if it killed both of them and didn't eat any of them, that is also considered a gzeira min hashamayim. And Tosfos explain the logic behind this assumption. Shehareim achla shnehem, since if it ate both of them, ain mishulachas, it is not considered literally sent from heaven. It's considered a natural consequence if it ate both of them. Deha de achla shneim lohavi mitam mishulachas ela mitam dehira eva. Since that which it ate both of them is not because the animal was sent min hashamayim, but rather because it was hungry. And since it was hungry, so it ate all the food that it has available, namely both of them. But if it killed both of them and only ate one of them, so we infer from the fact that it killed both of them and only ate one of them, that that's a gzeira min hashamayim. Because if it were hungry for both of them, then it should have eaten both of them. And if it was only hungry for one, then it should have only killed one and eaten that one and let the other person live. The fact that it killed both and ate one indicates that it's mishalachas. So all the more so, say Tosfos, that if it killed both and ate neither, that indicates that it's a gzeira min hashamayim. Because if it were hungry, then it should have eaten them. And the fact that it didn't indicates that it just sent min hashamayim just to kill. The assumption being that animals just don't kill for fun, that they kill because they're hungry. And presumably it's precisely that havamina, namely that animals would just kill for sport, and not only because they're hungry, that Tosfos is trying to negate. The whole reason we would think that if it doesn't eat any of them, that it would still be considered the natural animal behavior and would not necessitate a fast day would presumably be based on that assumption that animal kills for sport. So Tosfos is saying, no, that animals only kill when they're hungry. And therefore, if it kills two people and doesn't eat either of them, so that would be a kal v'chomer, that it's clearly a gzerim and a shemayim and not a natural consequence. So now Tosfos have to explain, why did the Gemara spell this out? That the only time it's considered a natural event is where it killed both and ate both. But on the other hand, if it killed both and ate one, or killed both and ate neither, that both of those are considered mishulachas and therefore worthy of decreeing a fast day over it. So Tosfos explained, last three lines, that which it chose to speak about the case of where it ate one of them, rather than also speaking about the case of where it ate neither of them, is to tell you a revusa, or a greater chiddush. Tosas continued the avagav to achlechem mehem, that even though it ate one of them having mishalachas, that is still considered sent. In other words, we do not say that it was hungry and therefore it killed both, thinking it would eat both, and then after eating one, it was full. But the motivation of killing both of them was hunger and not some gzerim and hashemayim that it was sent to kill. So that's a greater chiddush, that even in a case where it eats one, where we would have thought that it's doing it due to hunger, and therefore it's a natural event in the world, and not worthy of decreeing a fast day, we still say it's mishulachas, because the default would be that it should eat both. And all the more so, if it killed both and ate neither, so that is certainly a gzeirah min hashamayim, because it wouldn't just kill for fun or sport, it would only kill because of hunger. So, to summarize, Tosfos maintain that the only time that one does not fast, if even though it's tragic, but since it's part of the natural order, if a wild animal killed both and ate both, so we would not decree a fast day. But if it killed both and ate only one, and all the more so if it killed both and ate neither, there would indeed be a fast day decreed. And the reason the Gemara only said the case of one rather than the case of none is because it's telling you the greater chiddush. Because if it killed neither, then that's a lesser chiddush, because that clearly is a gzeirah min hashamayim. The case of eating one, where you might have thought it's because of hunger, is still considered a gzeirah min hashamayim. That's the greater chiddush. Little bit of an anomaly in Tosas's phraseology, because by the time Tosas is done, he points out that if it killed both of them and ate neither of them, that that's a kal v'chomer that you would decree a fast day. In Tosas's initial phraseology, he writes, "V'hu adin lo ochel echem mehem mishalachas." He doesn't say v'kal v'chomer. So perhaps he wrote that because he didn't yet develop the fact that it's a kal v'chomer. So first he started by just saying a lateral, that the same halach applies, and then he develops that it's even a kal v'chomer. The Mishnah Berurah notes where this is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Tov Kuf Ayin Vav, that Rabbeinu Chananel, somewhat mysteriously, paskins against Tosas and says that if it ate both or if it ate neither, so then that would be considered part of the natural order, and therefore one would not decree a fast. And it's only this unusual right in the middle, that if it killed both and ate one, that then we would decree a fast. Perhaps it's possible to suggest that Rabbeinu Chananel maintains, against our underlying assumption within Tosfos, that animals will kill for two reasons. One is to eat because it's hungry. Of course, that would lead to eating both of them. And one is to sharpen its hunting skills, or what is sometimes referred to as animal play. So if it kills both and eats neither, so it must have done it for sport in order to sharpen its hunting skills. And therefore, it's not considered a gzeirah min hashamayim because it's part of the natural order. If, on the other hand, it killed both and ate both, so that's as a result of hunger. But if it killed both and ate only one, perhaps Rabbeinu Chananel's svara is that then and only then we say mamanoshech. If it were hungry, it should have eaten both. And if it only was hungry for one, then it should have killed only one and eaten one. So why did it kill both and eat one? So that's a schizophrenic animal. It's not killing for hunger alone, as evidenced by the fact that it didn't eat both. And it's not killing for sport alone, as evidenced by the fact that it at least ate one. So perhaps that's the reason why Rabbeinu Chananel says what he says. Nonetheless, the Mishnah Berurah seems to side with the view of Tosfos as the more normative one, that we would view it as a kal v'chomer, that if it killed two or certainly more and didn't eat any of them, that would be grounds for the decreeing of fasting.
Sechtatainis daf chaf beis amad beis tosu yamaschil kimlo tanur tvua o dilma kimlo tanur pas. To review the background of the Gemara that Tosas are commenting on, the Mishnah had stated that the Chachamim found a malo tanur, or according to another girsa, a malo pitanur, of shidofon, of some kind of crop degeneration, a crop blight in Ashkelon, and because of that they decreed a fast day in all of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara here on the Avchav Beis and Beis analyzes exactly what is meant by the malo tanur. And that's the Divrei Maschil of Tosas. Is it a kamalo tanur tvua, o dilma kamalo tanur pas? Is it an oven filled with grain, or is it an oven filled with bread? So Rashi explains, by way of introduction and comparing and contrasting Rashi's interpretation with Tosas' interpretation, is that the question of the Gemara is as follows. Are we dealing with an oven that's filled with grain, which will fill the entire cavity of the oven, the entire halal, since grain does not stick? So therefore, when you fill in the oven with grain, it wouldn't just be sticking to the walls, it would be filling the whole cavity. Or are we dealing with a malot tanur pas, where the way to bake bread would not be to fill the whole oven with bread, but rather to stick it to the walls, unlike the way we bake bread nowadays, where we put it in pans in the oven. So the Gemara, somewhat vaguely, quotes a text that says that it's malo pi tanur. That's the girsa that we have. So the Mefarshim debate as to whether this is a direct quote from the Mishnah, in which case the Mishnah also should have the word pi in it, that the Chachamim found the malo pi tanur in Ashkelon, or is this a separate brisa? And indeed, the Gerus and the Mishnah should be without the word pi, and the brisa was the one that is adding the word pi. Either way, the way Rashi explains is that since it says filling the mouth of the oven rather than filling the oven, well, the only thing that could fill the mouth of the oven is bread and not grain, because grain would not be able to magically stay suspended in the mouth of the oven. Happens to be just as a matter of metzius, the ovens of old had the mouth on top, kind of like a teepee, a cone with the top chopped off rather than on the side in order to make it really hot. So the pair is referring to the top. But either way, the tvua, being very small and not sticky, could not stick to the top of the oven. Only bread could. So therefore, that proves the idea that it's referring to bread. The Gemara then proceeds to ask another sub-question as to exactly which part of the oven is filled with bread, but that we'll deal with about the time we get to the next osis. So that's the girsa that we have in the Gemara, that it quotes either the Mishnah itself, Melo Pi Tanur, or it quoted an outside brisa that the Mishnah didn't have the word Pi, but either way, it implies bread because of the fact that it mentions the idea of mouth. So Tosis, very similar to Rashi, although perhaps with a slightly different gears in the Gemara, states as follows. In terms of the original suffix of the Gemara, Melo Tanur Tvua, Otilma Kemelo Tanur Pas, Kemelo Tanur Tvua, does this refer to the oven filled with grain? Havi Perusho, its explanation is, Kemlo Chalala Tanur Tvua, with the amount of grain that would fill the whole cavity with the grain, again, similar to what Rashi explained, Tehainu Yoser Mimalo Tanur Pas, which is more than an oven filled with bread. Tos doesn't explain how. Rashi explains the greater detail, which presumably Tos also is going with, because the bread was only stuck to the wall, so it doesn't fill the whole cavity, just fills in, just attaches to the walls. So now Tosis quotes the proof of the Gemara, the Toshma, to the text we have in Tosis as follows. Quote, Kemelo Pi Tanur Pas. So the Achronim note that it sounds like Tosis had a slightly different girsa in our Gemara. Not that the Braisa, or according to one version, actually quoting the Mishnah, according to Tosis, with this girsa is clearly an outside Braisa because we don't have the word Pas in our Mishnah. And the quote is, Kemelo Pi Tanur Pas, that the Braisa actually said explicitly, filling the mouth of the oven with bread. So, of course, that's a dead giveaway that we're dealing with bread, as Tosis then proceeds to state explicitly, Vim Cain. If so, Ma'ir B'Pas is talking about bread, as the Braisa said explicitly. I saw in the Ozvar edition, they quote one of the Achronim who says, isn't that a rather redundant statement? Why does Tosis have to say Toshma Kimlo Pi Tanur Pas Im Kain Ma'ir B'Pas? That's like saying that if you don't know whether something is Aser or Mutter, and you quote a Braisa that says it's Aser by saying, so you see it's Aser because the Braisa said Aser. Normally, a phrase like Im Kain, if so, it's referring to something, is where there's some kind of diuk, some kind of inference, not that it says it explicitly. So based on that, the Sachron suggests that maybe we have a girsa problem within Tosis. So maybe you should just say the way we have an Agamar, Toshma Kimlo Pi Tanur, not the word Pas. And then it's a diuk, Im Kain Ma'ir B'Pas, and if so, it's talking about bread, similar to Rashi, because only bread could stick to the mouth of the oven, and certainly not grain, because it couldn't be suspended. So that's somewhat of a question how to read this last part of the Tosis. We actually have the word bread, in which case it's not a diuk, it's directly stated in the Braisa, or maybe without the word pas, in which case it's exactly the way Rashi explained the Gemara. To continue the background of the Gemara, this Tosis is a continuation of the previous Tosis in terms of explaining this Gemara. The Gemara had asked whether the Malo Tanur that they found in Ashkelon that caused them to decree a fast in all of Eretz Yisrael was Tvua or bread. And the Gemara concludes from the Braisa that says that it's Malo Pi Tanur and only bread could fit in the Pi Tanur, or according to our version that we have in Tosis, the Braisa explicitly said that it was Pitan or Pas. So the Gemara then further questions as to exactly where this bread is situated. In the words of the Gemara that we have, we'll see in a moment that Tosis seemed to have a different version. It reads as follows. Vadayin tiboy lahu, Tosis has tiboy loch, kichisuya de tanura, odilma kidor de rifta, hadarle lefuma de tanura. Explanation being, is that like the cover of the oven, or is that like a row of bread extending to the mouth of the oven? So the Mefarshim point out that Tosis seemed to have had a different girsa in the first suggestion. Our Gemara is Kichisuya de Tanura, the cover of the mouth of the oven. Tosis has Kimlo Eagle Pi Tanur, like the breadth or the fullness of a circle around the mouth. So before we get to the Tosis, let's contrast this and compare it with Rashi. Also, as we'll see, Rabbeinu Gershom. Our two possibilities in the Gemara is it like the cover of the oven, or is it like a row of bread in the oven? So concerning like the cover of the oven, Rashi is silent. But Rabbeinu Gershom, on the margin, which seems to have heavily influenced the commentary of Rashi that we have here, as we noted, the Rashi on Masechet Tainis is most likely not from the real Rashi, but someone who lived in approximately that era. It seems to be very influenced by Rabbeinu Gershom. So Rabbeinu Gershom explains that Kisuri de Tanor means dough being made into bread that's placed on the mouth of the oven. So that would be one loaf of bread. In terms of the second possibility, which is a raw of bread, so on this we have a Rashi, and Rashi comments that this could be one of two things. Either it's a raw of bread that are close to each other, surrounding the mouth of the oven, so that would be a circle surrounding the mouth of the oven, which you mentioned was on top. Alternatively, it's a raw of bread from the floor of the oven reaching the mouth of the oven. As we'll see later, whether Rashi is referring to multiple rows of bread or only one row going in a vertical line from the floor till the mouth of the oven, we'll see when we see the Tosfos. So now Tosfos, as we mentioned, in the first possibility of the Gemara, does not have the gears of kichisuya de tanura, like the mouth of the, like the cover of the oven, but rather kimlo eagle pitanu. So Tosfos explained. The hainu shura shalechem svivos pihatanur. Namely, that is a row of bread surrounding the mouth of the oven. Then Tosfos quotes the second possibility of the Gemara, Odilma kidar de rifta vahadarle lepume de tanura, like a row of bread that extends to the mouth of the oven. So Tosfos explains what that means. Shuro shuro shalechem zo lamala mizo ad piatanur. Multiple rows of bread, one above the other, until the mouth of the oven. So it's clear that Tosfos understands that it's not one row of bread, a vertical column from the floor till the mouth of the oven, but rather multiple rows of bread, one circle on top of another circle on top of another circle, all the way up to the mouth of the oven. Each circle getting smaller because the ovens of old were, as we mentioned in the previous Tosfos, were more like a teepee with the top cut off, like a cone, as you mentioned. So it's multiple rows. So to review, according to Tosfos, the two possibilities that the Gemara has are, number one, Mlo Eagle Pitanur, meaning one circle of bread around the opening of the tanur, or is it rows and rows of bread that extend toward the tanur? So that would be quite a difference in terms of the amount of shidafon, or blight in the crops, that the Chachamim found in Ashkelon before they declared the fast. In contrasting Tosfos with what we quoted from Rashi and a little from Rabbeinu Gershom, so assuming Rashi is going to Rabbeinu Gershom, for Rashi the first possibility is one loaf of bread on top of the oven. And the second possibility is either one ring at the mouth of the oven, or the simple reading of Rashi is one vertical column from the floor till the mouth of the oven. Tosfos, by contrast, has the first possibility as one circle of bread surrounding the mouth of the oven, which, according to Rashi, was one of the possibilities of the second understanding of the Gemara, of what the Gemara called the Dora Derifta. So what Tosfos has as the pshat of the first possibility of the Gemara, Rashi has as one possibility of the second pshat of the Gemara. Tosfos' interpretation of the second pshat of the Gemara, of Dora Derifta, is multiple circles of bread leading to the top. As we mentioned, according to Rashi, it could be it's only one column of bread. Again, the Rashi can be read differently, that when Rashi says it's a column that goes from the bottom to the top, maybe he's referring also to circle after circle, as similar to Tosfos. As a footnote to this entire discussion, on Chav Beis Amud Aleph, the Braisa quotes a machlokus between the Tanakama and Rabbi Akiva. It's possible that Rabbi Akiva is just explaining the words of the Tanakama, but it is presented at first glance, at least as machlokus. And that Braisa states, Al Eilu Masriyin b'chol makom, al Shidofon, v'al Yirokon, v'al Arbe, v'chasil, v'al Chayero. On that, Rabbi Akiva states, Al Shidofon, v'al Yirokon, v'chol Shehu. That even the smallest amount of Shidofon, Yirokon as well, one would declare a fast. The implication might be that the Tanakhama holds that there's a certain shear. If we go with that approach, it is a machlokis. So then the Mishnah that records that the Chachamim found a Malo Tanner's worth, and according to the Gemara, a Malo P Tanner's worth, with all of the doubts the Gemara has over here, which parenthetically ends in a teku, and as a result of that, they declared a fast everywhere, that they would be going with the Tanakhama, that it's not enough to have just a kol shehu of Yerokon in order to declare a fast. You have to have a shear. And that shear is a Malo Pitanu. However, Rashi, on Chav Beis Amud Aleph, in raising the difficulty that Rabbi Akiva seems to give a shir of a kolshu, and Rashi seems to either understand that Rabbi Akiva is just explaining the Tanakama, or as the margin points out based on another version, that Rashi didn't have the girsa of a Tanakama and Rabbi Akiva, that it was all the same Tana who was saying that it's a kolshu. So then he asks, but the Mishnah says that they only decreed a fast based on a Malopi Tana's worth. So to that, Rashi gives two answers. Answer number one is there might be a difference in terms of what you decree as a result. Maybe if it's a kolshu, that's only enough to sound the alarm, to blow the shofar or daven with anenu, but not to fast, and you need a malo pitaner's worth in order to declare a fast. That's his first interpretation. According to that, there is a shear that's necessary in order to decree a fast, and that would help explain why our Gemara is so mefalpeil and analyzes this exactly what the shear is, and multiple layers of questioning and sub-questioning, etc., etc. But then Rashi gives a surprising alternate answer, that was the story, a Maisa Shahaya Kachaya. As the Mishnah records, there was an actual story that occurred, that the Chachamim found a Malo Taner's worth, according to the conclusion of our Gemara, a Malo P Taner's worth of Shidafon, and they declared a fast. But it does not necessarily imply that had they found less, that they would not declare the fast. So the Magen Mishnah and the Rambam points out that according to that second pshat of Rashi, it's quite difficult that the Gemara spent so much time analyzing as to what that story was, as to how much they found, when how much they found is not really relevant to Halacha. According to that second pshat in Rashi, you'll have to say that this analysis is indeed what proverbially is called the Kashaf HaMaisa, that we are trying to analyze exactly what the story was. Lahalacha, the Rambam paskins that there is a shear, and that story is meant to be dafka, that it's because they found the Malo Pitanur that they declared a fast. Had they found less, then they would not declare a fast. I'm just noting that the Mishnah that records, without giving a shear, that Allah Shidavon while Yerokon, you fast, and then it quotes a story that they found a certain amount, it's not necessarily obvious that amount that they found was crucial in order to declare the fast. Maybe they would have declared the fast even less, and that would perhaps be a support to Rashi's second interpretation of Chof Beis Amar Aleph. I thought Lani Azdaiti, in my humble opinion, that that's also mashma that way from the Rosh and the Rif, who quote the Mishnah verbatim, and they quote the story, and they ignore the analysis of the Gemara of how much is a Malo Pitanu. And perhaps the reason that they ignore it is because it's not relevant to Halacha, because the Shir ultimately, in terms of decreeing the fast, will be perhaps even a Mashu, and the analysis of the Gemara is just analyzing exactly what the story was. In the context of a discussion of wild animals killing people or being seen by people, chasing after people, that is grounds for decreeing a fast. So the Mishnah records that they were gozer tainis because wolves ate two babies or young children in Eva Hayarden, on which Rabbi Yossi says that they even decreed a fast because the wolves were seen, not necessarily because they killed. So the Gemara records a halachic discussion, perhaps on that very same story, perhaps on a different story, that when wolves devoured two children or two babies and they expelled them, v'hakiyam derech beis harei, they were excreted on the other end of the animal. So v'maisa lefnei chachamim, the story came before the chachamim in analyzing whether after that tragedy, with all of the emotional sorrow that engendered, but in addition to that, analyzing the halachas of whether those children, who obviously were not alive anymore, whether their bodies were metame, so the chachamim were metare sabasar, and metame the atzamos, that the flesh, which is metame b'maga b'masa b'ohel, a kazayis of a mace, is metame in those ways, and the atzamos, depending on how much you have, and certain so on and so forth, whether it's b'maga b'masa or b'ohel, with touching and moving, and then an ohel, depending on how much there is, so they are metare sabasar, that is no longer considered the flesh of the deceased, but the bones were considered to still be bones. And this, of course, revolves around the question of whether they were considered halakhically digested. If they're considered halakhically digested, so that's what the Gemara calls perish ba'alma. It's like waste material and is no longer considered related to a classic mace of a human being, a body of a human being. And if, on the other hand, it's considered undigested, so then it would still transmit tumma. So this is what this Tosis is going on with Tiras Abasar. And we'll read the Tosis first and then contrast it with the Rashi. So Tosis explained Pirish, Lefishanis Aklu, with an ayin, because the flesh was digested b'me'e hazevim, in the digestive tract of the wolves, and that's why they declared it to be Tohar, because it was considered Perish Balma, just like waste material. V'timu esatzamos, on the other hand, they declared the bones to still engender Tumah, delo me'eklu, because those were not considered digested, because they're harder. It sounds like from the simple reading of Tosfos that it doesn't really matter how long it stayed in the digestive tract, that halachically, because it went through the system, so therefore the flesh, which is soft, is considered halachically digested, and the bones are not because they're hard. And this is mashma also from the Rambam when he discussed this lahalacha about flesh going through a body, also relevant for nevela, for a dead animal that's consumed, if an animal is consumed by another animal and goes through the digestive tract. The Rambam writes that when it goes through the base array, it's excreted, so no matter how long it stayed there, it is already considered halachically digested, as opposed to hard materials like bones, which are not halachically digested yet. So Rashi, seemingly in contrast to Tosfos, although Tosfos is a little bit vague about this, so Rashi writes explicitly in the Rimaschel v'tiras abasar that it's considered digested, then it's nullified in its stomach, in its digestive tract, and Rashi adds the following phrase, u'chagon sheshohu yemei ikul u'pirsha ba'almahu. We're talking about a case where it waited with inside the stomach tract of the animal in question, here wolves, the normal amount of time that it would take to digest, known as the shear equal. And therefore, it's considered pirsha ba'alma, it's just mere waste material. So this leads to a whole discussion among the Gedolei HaRishonim and Achronim in analyzing this Rashi, which is clearly in contrast with the Rambam, because the Rambam writes explicitly that even if it came out very quickly, according to Rashi, it has to stay for the amount of time that it normally takes to digest. And this, the Rishonim point out, is relevant to a Mishnah Masechta Ahalos that is pointed out in the margin of the Oz V'Hadar in Perek Yud Aleph, as well as a major sugya in Masechta Menachos, which is pointed out in all the Gemaras on the margin, Samach Tesamer Aleph and Samach Tesamer Beis, that discusses all kinds of unusual situations about an elephant swallowing a basket and then it comes out of the digestive tract on the other end. Is it still considered a kli anymore in terms of transmission of tumah? Or if it an animal swallowed, let's say, lulav leaves and then it comes out the other end, is that considered like waste material, or is it still considered like products of a tree, of an eitz, and therefore if you made a basket out of it, it'll be considered a kli eitz and would be makabel tumah, or a kli glolim, which is kalim made out of waste material, which is not makabel tumah. And in that context, they quote this story that our Gemara quotes of Ula in the name of Shimon ben Yotzedek about Nebuch, the children who were swallowed by the wolves and came out the other end, that the flesh is not metame and the bones are. So Tosfos over there in Menachos, as well as other Rishonim and Achronim, all discuss this topic. And they all note that there's a machlokis here going on. Tosfos over there gives other possible distinctions as to when it is metame and when it's not metame. But one major point of contention is, do you need the time for digestion to occur in order for the flesh to be considered no longer tame, and the same in terms of the basket, in terms of what's being discussed by Menachos. So on a simple level, this seems to be machlokas here between Rashi and Tosfos. So Rashi requires the digestion period to have passed, and Tosfos, similar to the Rambam explicitly, and Tosfos seems to, by his silence, to not require it. The digestive period is discussed in all those, depending on the type of creature it is, with the majority of the Rishonim assuming that a dog takes 3 days to digest, and a bird less, perhaps right away, perhaps a full 24-hour period, about that, and with other animals requiring 24 hours. And there's an interesting discussion within the Rashi, because Rashi said yemei ikul, the days of digestion. So does that imply that he holds that all animals are like dogs and it takes 3 days? Or maybe yemei ikul means a day which is like 2 days, namely a full day of 24 hours. A tangential discussion within the laws of Tumah V'Tahara, the unknown frontier of learning. Totally changing the subject matter, the Gemara discusses, elaborating on the Mishnah, that there are certain dangers where we will call out on Shabbos, according to the Maskanas HaGemara, on the Yud Aleph. It's not referring to blowing shofar on Shabbos, but it's referring to davening on Shabbos. And the Gemara presents a brisa elaborating on this, that if you have a city, Sheki for Nochem, is surrounded by non-Jews, or a river is threatening to flood the city, or there's a boat, there's a ship at sea that is in danger of drowning, or a private individual is being chased by non-Jews and his life is in danger, or some kind of evil spirit, psychological insanity overcomes him and he's in danger of losing his life. So for all those things, the Braisa states that the Yochid is permitted to fast. In the language of the Braisa, Kulan Yochid Rashoi Lesage Fesasma Betainis. And all of them, the individual, is permitted literally to pain himself with fasting. And Rabbi Yossi says, Ein Yochid Rashoi Lesage Fesasma Betainis, that the individual is not allowed to pain himself with fasting. And why is that? So the Gemara says, Shem Yitzdarich Lebrios, because maybe he'll get so sick and weak that he won't be able to support himself and he'll be required to take tzedakah and others won't have mercy on him necessarily. And then his life will be in danger as a result of that. So he cannot pain himself with fasting. So Rashi and Tosfos both first deal with the meaning of the word Lesagef. So Tosfos, following Rashi, point out as follows, while Kulan Rashoi Lesagef Asum Betainis Pirish. So Tosfos explain that the meaning of this word Lesagef is based on a pasuk, which Rashi quotes, which appears at the beginning of Parashas Matos concerning the Dorim, Le'anos Nefesh, to cause pain to the soul, in this context really the body, Mitargaminan Lesagfa Nefesh, Lesagef in Aramaic, to cause pain. So that's what the word Lesagef means. So to cause pain through fasting in this context is the debate between the Tanakhama and Rav Yossi as to whether or not the individual is allowed to do that. The next house is the Maschil Rav Yossi Omer Ein Ayochid Rashoi Lesagef elaborates a bit as to what this machlokas is all about. At first glance, when we have Tzara, so fasting is supposed to take place. That's what this whole Masechta is practically about, outside of the fourth parak, about fasting, times of Tzara. So what exactly is this debate about? So Tosfos, somewhat cryptically, explain as follows. Venerally, appears to me, the Hani Tanoi, that these Tanoi, meaning the Tanakam and Rav Yossi here, where the Tanakama says that the Yochid is allowed to pain himself with fasting, and Rav Yossi holds no, lo pligi, that Lamed Pei, lo pligi beho demairi Hani Amaroi vipirkindel ale. They're not arguing in that which those Amroim were referring to earlier in the first parak, the Afiyur Aleph Amabez. There you had to recall a machlokas between Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar, among other people. Im nikrochote o nikrokadosh v'chule. If a faster is called a sinner, or is he called a saint, or is he called someone who's holy? Where Shmuel said he's called a sinner, similar to a nazir, who in his view is also called a sinner for depriving himself of wine, and Rabbi Elazar saying that he's called a kadosh, and all the more so a faster was even more ascetic and depriving himself of even more pleasures of the world. This is not that machlokas. How so? So Tosfos elaborate and explain the ha'amaroi pligi. Since those Amaroyim are arguing about a situation where he could cause himself pain, meaning he could handle it, it's not going to impact upon his health. So there, Rabbi Elazar says that he's called the Kadosh, and Shmuel says, even so, needlessly depriving oneself from pleasures of the world that are permissible is called a sin. That's that machlokas, that if you can't handle it, for sure it's called a sin. But if you can handle it, so that's a machlokas. V'hani Tanoi, and these Tanoim over here, earlier was a machlokas Amaroyim on Daf Yud Aleph, here it's a machlokas Tanoim, Tanakam Rabbi Yossi. So pligi b'delo motzi l'tzuri nafshik. They're talking about a situation where you cannot handle the pain. That's exactly Rabbi Yossi's point, that if you're going to fast in a way that's going to put your health at risk, so you're going to not be able to support yourself and you'll need tzedakah and people won't have rachmanas on you because it's your own fault that you did that. And the Tanakhama says, no, in a time of distress, you're allowed to do that, and you'll have to take that risk that hopefully you'll be healthy, and if not, that people will indeed support you and give you tzedakah. So, presumably, Tosfos is answering the implicit question of, wasn't this machlokas already debated? Or another way to put that is, why are the Amaroyim arguing on Daf Yud Aleph about something that seems to be machlokas here on Daf Chav Beis? So to that, his answer is that they're arguing about different things. The machlokas Tanoim is a situation where you can't handle it, and the machlokas Amaroyim is a situation of where you can handle it. Now, it gets a little sticky, because presumably the default should be that the halacha should follow the Tanakhama. And the Tanakhama is allowing you then to fast even when you cannot handle it. So how could Shmuel go to the opposite extreme and say that you're not allowed to fast by default, it's called the sin, even when you can handle it? So perhaps that could be resolved by the fact that the Ran plays around with the possibility that maybe the halacha should follow Rabbi Yossi. Since the Gemara was mefalpel and analyzed the reason of Rabbi Yossi, the Gemara quotes of Yehuda Merav, sourcing it from the Pasuk Vahi Adam Lenefesh Chaya, to make sure to take care of your neshama that I gave you, keep it inside the body, you should be healthy, etc. So maybe the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. So if the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, that would mean that when you cannot handle it, for sure you're not allowed to fast. So now the Amaroyim have a machlokis, Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar, as to are you allowed to fast when you can handle it? So that would solve that problem.
However, it would appear that perhaps another answer is more correct, and that is based on Tosfos on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. There, in Dibre Maschil Amar Shmuel, Tosfos had raised a contradiction between what Shmuel writes here in our Gemara and a Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Tzadi Aleph Amud Beis. Here, Shmuel on the Daf Yud Aleph says that one who fasts is called a chote, and there in Baba Kama, he directly implies that one who fasts is just engaging in a Dvar Rishus, something that is optional and is not a sinner. That's the explicit implication of that Gemara there. So Tosfos comes up with a whole approach that we elaborate on in the Shir on that Tosfos, that fasting is a mixed bag. On the one hand, fasting brings us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by taking a break from the gashmius of the world, similar to the Nazir. On the other hand, by depriving ourselves from nutrition and even pleasure of the world, we are not partaking of Hashem's bounty, and that's considered sinful. So Tosfos there pointed out that even Shmuel agrees that the spiritual benefit that's gained by fasting outweighs the minor sin that fasting entails. And he compared it to a tainus chalom, fasting over a dream, a bad dream on Shabbos, where you're encouraged to do that, even though it's a sin and it needs kapara. And so according to that approach, Shmuel, even though he calls fasting a sin, could hold like either approach on our amud, on Chav Beis Amud Beis, where the Tanakhama says, according to Tosfos' understanding of them, that you're allowed to fast in times of tzara, even if lo matzi l'tzuri nafshe, even though it's really difficult to do so. And according to Rabbi Yossi, you're not allowed to do so, lest you fall on the tzibur that will have to support you. So we had asked that Shmuel seems to be totally incompatible with the Chachamim, the majority view, which at least at first, should be the psak. Because if the Chacham allow you to fast even when you can't really handle it, lo matzitz or inafshe, then how could Shmuel, who, according to Tosfos, is referring to a situation of matzitz or inafshe, where you can handle the fast, how could he say that even that is called sinful? If even when you cannot handle it, you're allowed to do so, how could even when you can handle it be called a sin? So perhaps here's the answer, because Tosfos l'shitasam, that even according to Shmuel, the fact that it's a sin doesn't mean you're not allowed to do it. But you're not allowed to sin. But this is a balance between the spiritual benefit that one is getting through fasting outweighing the sinful aspect of it, of the fast and its deprivation. So Shmuel could hold like either opinion. He could hold like the Chachamim, that you're allowed to fast even in a case of lo matzi l'tzuri nafshe, but there's a sinful aspect to it, but that might be outweighed by the spiritual benefit of it. In the case of the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi here, we're talking about trying to save yourself from tzara. And he could also hold like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi holds that by lo matzi l'tzuri nafshe, there it's usur to fast. And in the case of Shmuel, of matzi l'tzuri nafshe, so there it's, according to Tosfos' approach, it's mutter to fast, even though there's a sinful aspect to it. But more fundamentally, what exactly, as we mentioned earlier, is the problem here? There's a danger that's happening, and isn't the approach to fast. So why are the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi arguing whether you're allowed to fast? So perhaps the simplest reading of Tosfos can be explained based on something I saw in the collection of Achron in the back from Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that first he's medayik, that the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi seem to be talking about the yochid, the individual. So the diuk is, presumably, that the tzibur can fast. So, and that's what Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, that's the ABCs of this Masechta, that we fast over Tzara, Monday and Thursday, etc. So the Tzibur is allowed to fast over Tzara, at Tzara Satzibur. That if there's a tragedy that's hitting the community, then they have no choice but to fast, even though it might lead to weakness, but they have to try to avert the Gzera. But the Braisa had discussed situations of a Tzara Satzibur, like an Ir Shekifu Nachrim, where the city is surrounded by non-Jews, or river threatens to overflow. And then it also talks about a yachid who is besieged by some kind of tzara. So on the level of the yachid, so the Tanoim argue as to whether they could fast. But the tzibur certainly should fast. And now Tosfos' comment as to what
is the root of the debate between the Yachid being able to fast or not. And that is because he can't handle it, and maybe he's still allowed to take that risk. That's the Tanakama, or that he cannot take that risk. That's Rabbi Yossi.
The underlying assumption of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that even in sorrows of this nature, where you have non-Jews or a river threatening to destroy a city, that on a tzibur level, there are fasts that are declared. So that assumption is made by the Magid Mishnah in interpreting a certain Rambam, that even for these sorrows, there are taniyos tzibur that are declared. However, other Rishonim, such as the Ramban and the Ran, will quote the words of the Ran in a moment. They maintain that the fact that Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim disagree concerning whether a Yochid is allowed to fast or not, that implies that there certainly are no fast days that are decreed on the level of the tzibur. They give different reasons as to why we wouldn't decree fast days in this circumstance. For now, we'll mention the Svara of the Ramban. Since they're in distress of imminent danger, and there's what the Rishonim term Bahala, great fright, or what the Tosefta calls a concern that they might break their koach, their strength that's necessary to fight against the enemies, or to take efforts to, I guess, build dikes against the river, so then fasting would be dangerous in this circumstance. So it's hard to know whether Tosfos holds like that idea that we are fasting on the level of the tzibur. But it seems very plausible that even if Tosfos agree with the Ramban and the Ran that there are no fast days decreed on the level of the tzibur, but the svara of the debate as whether the Yachid can volunteer to fast, and even in these kinds of sorrows, the Tanakama allowing it and Rabbi Yossi not allowing it, and Tosfos refers to that situation as a case of lo motzi litzurei nafshei, that he's not really able to handle the fasts. Why does Tosfos assume that this situation is a situation where he can't handle the fast? So it could be because of that svara the Ramban mentions, because there's bahala and great fright as a result of the imminent danger and the fact that it needs a lot of koach to deal with it. However, it's also possible, although there's not enough information in the Tosfos to say that he really holds this way, that maybe Tosfos is driving at the analysis that's given by the Ran. The Ran points out as follows, that there are different kinds of tzoros. There are tzoros like the absence of rain, where people aren't trapping in the streets immediately, and in the language of the Ran, it's sovel matun. It's a process that is going to take time before the danger becomes absolutely acute, but you see the danger is lurking, and therefore you could fast on Monday and Thursday and Monday and different series of fasting, etc., in order to, Bezrat Hashem, avert the decree. But there's certain kinds of tzoros that, in the language of the Ran, that there ain't em sol in matun. You can't wait. There's an immediate imminent danger where death is at the doorstep. So if a river is about to flood the city, or the enemy forces are besieging, and at any point they could storm the city, and the same on the level of the Yochid. So there, the Ran writes, it wouldn't really make sense to fast on Monday, Thursday, Monday, because there's really a need to fast every day. And that's too much, or can be too much. So that's what the Ran says, the difference between fasting and lesagef asmo betainis. He's medayik from that word. That lesagef means that here, the situation would really require fasting every day. And that the Chachamim would never ordain. Not on the level of the tzibur, and not even on the level of the Yachid. The question, though, that the Tanoim take up here, is the Yachid allowed to be mesagef atzmo in this very dangerous situation that would require fasting every day to do so? And on that, the Tanakama says yes, and Rabbi Yossi says no. Happens to be, I'm giving this year in the period of the 3 weeks. So, very famously in the Agadat Tangitin, which is oftentimes learned on Tisha B'Av, concerning the Chorban. So one of the three things that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai asked of Vespasian when he was able to swing a deal with him is to get Yavne and to preserve the family of the Nasi, of Rabbi Gamliel, and to get a doctor for Rabbi Tzadik. Rabbi Tzadik, the Holy Tana, had been fasting, sounds like basically every day, to avert the Chorban. And that was a situation, She'eno Sova Metun, because that was an ear that was surrounded by Nochrim, and there was imminent danger, and he was fasting every day. So he was either following the Tanakama, or as the Ran here explains, based on other Amoraim who fasted consecutive days,
that maybe had independent Parnasa, so he was not going to have to be dependent on the Tzibur. But either way, we have a model of that idea of someone fasting very, very frequently, and perhaps even every day, way beyond the normally ordained Monday, Thursday, Monday. So it's possible, although I don't think there's enough in Tosfos to indicate that, that maybe Tosfos is going with that idea of fasting every day, and that's why it's a situation of lo motzi litzurei nafshei. That's a very dangerous situation that you can't really cause yourself so much pain. And that's the machlokas between the Tanoim as to whether you're allowed to do that. Toysi Maschil Anche Mishmar. The Bach changes the girsa to La Anche Maimed. The background of the Gemara is that on all tzaris we would fast and call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the exception of an abundance of rain. But that's only true when the abundance of rain is more of a nuisance, but it's not going to be a danger to life. But if it's actually going to be a danger to life, so then the abundance of rain, which would perhaps cause flooding and people dying, so that certainly would be reason to fast and call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara quotes the statement of Rami Bar Rav Yud, interesting name of the Amora, as Rashi points out, that was his name, that in the exile, meaning in Bavel, so we will indeed be Masriya and call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, perhaps fast as well, over the abundance of rain. So on that, the Gemara quotes a brisa that when there was excessive rain in any given season, so the Anshei Mishmar, with the Kohanim who are on duty that particular week, the Kohanim having been divided into 24 families who worked in the Mikdash twice a year. So these Anshei Mishmar would send to the Anshei Maimed, Tosfos is going to define who they are, as does Rashi, Tenuei Nechem Bacheichem Shebegola Shelo Yehei Boteihem Kivreihem. Place your eyes, meaning pay attention to your brethren in the exile, that their houses shouldn't be their graves. In other words, that they might be flooded and Chalila drown. So it is on that that Tosfos' comment, somewhat different from Rashi as we shall see, the Bach changes the girsa to the Anshei Maimed, because what we have in the Gemara is that the Anshei Mishmar would send to the Anshei Maimed. So Tosfos explained, Pirish, the Hainu Anshei Maimed, the Yesh B'Yisrael, these are the people of literally of the standing, of the shifts, the Yesh B'Yisrael that exist in Israel, Shehayu Nechlokim L'mamados L'spalel. As Tosfos quote from the fourth parak, that they were divided up into various watches, or into various shifts, to generally daven. In the context of the fourth parak, to daven for the acceptance of the korbanos. Just as the Kohanim were divided up into Mishmaros, so the Gemara says that groups of Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim were divided up into Mamados, the Kohanim to do the Avoda, and the Anshei Maimed to pray for the acceptance of the korbanos. Possible to put the comma in a slightly different place. Pirish Tahainu Anshei Maimed, the Yesh B'Yisrael, Shoyu Nechlokim L'Mamados L'Spalel. There were of the Jewish people who would divide up into the various shifts to daven. I prefer putting the comma earlier. Anshei Maimed, the Yesh B'Yisrael, the Anshei Maimed who were a subset of Israel, and they would who were they? That they would be subdivided into the Mamados in order to daven. So now Tosfos continue with the context of Agamara, that not only should they be davening for the Korbanos, but if there's excessive rain, Sheyispalu Alachem Shebegola, that they should daven for their brethren in exile, Pirish, why should they daven? Why are the Jews living in Bavel more in danger to flooding than their parallel counterparts in Eretz Yisrael? Fi Shegagoseim Shavim, because their rooftops were flat. And as a result of that, they can disintegrate as a result of the great rains. And of course, the rains will go straight into the house and cause a danger of flooding and even death. In this, Tosfos is mimicking that which appears in several Rashis throughout Shas. Among them, I recall one in Makos concerning someone who's trying to put tar or pitch on the roof and then the kli drops and kills somebody. So Rashi notes that based on French architecture, the rooftops were slanted, as is more common in our era in many countries. So the rain should go off at an angle. And Rashi notes that in the times of the Gemara, it was much more common that the rooftops were flat. So Tosfos, surprisingly, seems to indicate that in Eretz Yisrael, the roofs were slanty, and therefore there was no danger of flooding. But in Bavel, the rooftops were flat. That does not seem to be the indication of those various Rashis who seems to imply that even in Eretz Yisrael, the roofs were flat in the times of the Tanoim and the Amoraim. But in any case, Tosfos explains that that's why the Babylonian homes were more in danger of flooding. Rashi here gives a totally different shot that allows for an understanding that maybe all the rooftops were the same, whether they were slanty or flat, but probably flat, because that's what Rashi says in other places in Shas. But it has to do with the topography of the specific region. Rashi explains that Bavel is much lower than Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is much hillier, and Bavel is much flatter and perhaps lower down, and therefore other rains in the mountaintops would be more likely to drown them. Shamukahi, that it's a deep area, Rashi explains, near Maslo Shloyehe Bateim Kivreim. This seems to be mimicked by a Gemara earlier, which actually says the Shvach in terms of the fact that because of that, there was such abundant moisture there from rains, because it was low in the valley, that's on Daf Yud Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says that Bavel is Shochenes on Mayim Rabim, and it's a very fertile ground. Chatzta below Mitra, it's able to plow without rain. Tovani below Yobshani, Rashi explains a Mokam Metzula. So it's a low area, so it gets a lot of rain, and that could be Latova, but it could also be Lara as a result of flooding. So somewhat of a difference between Rashi and Tosis as to why the people living in exile were more in danger. Tosus to Maschil Karen Ofel. The Gemara following up on the story recorded in the Mishnah of Choni HaMa'agel, who davened for rain, and Hashem answered his prayer. And then they asked him to daven that the rain should stop, because there was so much rain, and Choni HaMa'agel said, go see if the Evan HaToen is dissolved. Basically, he was trying to tell them that stone, the Perushim as to what exactly it was dissolved, meaning it's not going to dissolve, and therefore basically we don't daven for an abundance of rain, at least in Eretz Yisrael, because it's not dangerous. In the end, the Gemara records that he did daven, but generally that wouldn't be done. So the Gemara here records a follow-up question that they asked Rabbi Eliezer, that how much rain has to fall in Eretz Yisrael they should daven. So he gave basically a sarcastic answer, which basically means never. And the answer was, that a person should stand in a place called Keren Ofel, literally the corner of Ofel, corner of darkness, and wade his feet in the water. So Rashi explains that basically the answer is we're never going to daven for an abundance of rain, because there's no way that someone could stand in Keren Ofel, which was a very, very high mountain area, and have the rain go all the way up to his feet so he could put his feet in the water. It will never happen. So the Gemara elaborating on that as to how high this mountain was quotes the statement of Rabbi Bar Rachana, that I saw that place and there was some Arab merchant who was riding his camel and he was holding a spear, and he, in the language of the Gemara, our Girsa is Mischazi Iniva. So what is this Keren Ofel? So Tosis, following Rashi, explains that it's the name of a place. Pirish Shemoko. Don't try to darshan its meaning. The next Tosis now follows up on the word Iniva or Inba that the Gemara records Rabbi Bar Chana as seeing this Arab who looked like that. So in the context, of course, it means he looked very small. So what exactly is it that he was describing him as looking as? So Tosus explains, Pirish Landa Balaz, Machmas Govu Shalhar. It means Landa because of the height of the mountains. Obviously something small. What is Landa? On the margin, they point out that Landa is a nit or an egg of a louse. So this is one of two Perushim in Rashi. Tosis is actually following Rashi's second pshat, that it means a nit. Rashi actually points out that if it does mean a nit, he adds in a few letters here. Ki inba. Rabbi Nachmanal points out that should be one word. Kinba, which, quoting another Gemara, seems to mean a nit. First pshat Rashi gives, which is also the pshat given by Rabbi Nachmanal, is that the proper gear says iniva, and it means a tolas or a worm. Either way, those are small creatures. Obviously, a nit is even smaller than a tolas, than a worm, but the point being that it's a very high mountain, and a person riding on top of it would appear very small to someone on the bottom. And that was Rabbi Eliezer's sarcasm, that we're never going to daven if there is an overabundance of rain in Eretz Yisrael, because it's not a danger to life. And he sarcastically answered that you're never going to have a situation where the feet will be able to be weighted in the water that come up to the top of that mountain. The next Tosfos actually belongs to the next Amud, Achok Gilmer Aleph, and just because Tos takes a break for a while, so we'll do it here. Tos the Maschil, Belele Revios, Velele Shabbosos. The Gemara quotes the Pasuk at the end of Chumash Vayikra, in Parshat Bechukosai, Venasatigish Mechem Beitom, that if you follow the Torah, I will give the rains in its time. That's an extension to the discussion about an overabundance of rain. So, giving rain in its time, the Rice elaborates, is it's not going to be too much. It's not going to be too little, even if it's not going to be a danger to life, but certainly an overabundance of rain can cause problems. An alternate pshat is be'ita means at a time period that it won't be a nuisance to people, meaning when they want to go on the road, so if it's raining, it's harder to travel. So in that, the Gemara quotes an alternate meaning that be'ita is belele revios of belele shabbosos, on the night of the fourth day and the night of Shabbos, meaning Tuesday night and Friday night. And why is that? Why does that prevent any kind of nuisance? So Tosus explained, same as Rashi, that people are traveling during the day, an and they might be traveling certain nights as well. But on the eve of Wednesday, meaning Tuesday night, and on the night of Shabbos, Friday night, they don't travel on the road. And why don't they travel on the road? So those explain as follows. Pirish lohoye b'nei adam holchem b'drochim ba'osan leilos. People would not travel on the road on those nights. Mipnei agras bas machalas. K'dem aforesh m'sech t'psochim. Because of this mysterious agras bas machalas, as explained in psochim, daf kuf yud beis amud beis. Again, Rashi quotes that as well. Who is this agras bas machalas? So the Gemara explains that she's a demon and is going to cause hezek. She's the head of many demonic forces, and people traveling then can be subject to her destructive ways. So what Tosis, following Rashi, say is that that's why people don't travel on that night, that the cause is the fact that the demons are around, and the effect is that people don't travel on the night. So since they're not traveling, so that's a good time for rain, because this way people are not traveling anyway. It's interesting, and it's pointed out by the Mashah, that in that Gemara, the Gemara says that this demon met up with Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, the famous miracle worker, the tzaddik. So the demon said to Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, if not for the fact that you are so holy in Shemayim that they consider you to be a very important tzaddik, a very special person, so I would do all kinds of damage to you. So Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, seizing the opportunity, says, if I'm so choshev, so they'll have to listen to my decrees, and I decree that you should never appear again. The great Avos Yisrael, that now to take care of his own life and health, but to take care of the rest of Klal Yisrael, that you should go away. So she pleaded with him, but, you know, I have a job to do. You can't just, like, send me away like that. So they made a pshara that she would appear only on Tuesday nights and Friday nights. And hence you have the conclusion of Rashi and Tosis here. So that's what the Mashal just points out. This is a pasuk in Chumash. V'nasatigish mechem b'tom. And that was written before this meeting between Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa and Agras bas Machlas. So how could the Gemara say that Be'itam means those particular two nights, but originally the demon was around all the time, every night? So Amar Shah explains that the Gemara is just updating according to our era, that originally Be'itam would mean it would fall at night and not during the day. And he quotes a Rashi and Chumash, who says exactly that, that Be'itam means at night and not during the day. But nowadays, it would mean the eve of Wednesday, meaning Tuesday night, and Friday night, meaning the night of Shabbos. If not the pshat of Rashi and Tosis, I would have thought that the cause and effect should be switched. Rashi and Tosis are assuming that because the demon's around Tuesday night and Friday night, B'leil Revi, B'leil Shabbos, that's why people don't go out. But wait a second. Why did they swing a deal between Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa and Agras bas Machlas that that's when the demon should appear? Why are those nights better than other nights? So I would have thought, Lanias Daiti, that for whatever reason, people are not traveling those nights anyway. Friday night, the Mashal points out, because that's a day of rest, so people are not traveling for the business, etc. Just a quick trip to shul and then back. And Tuesday night for maybe some other reason. And some suggest a specific reason why people might not be traveling on the night. But and that's why Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa made that deal with her, that you want to hang out in the world, so hang out in the world when people are not there anyway. So according to that approach, the cause would be that people are not there anyway. And the effect would be the demon's there, that the demon would frequent those nights so that it doesn't cause damage. If that's true, then the Pashup Shad on our Gemara could have been that the Tuesday nights and the Friday nights, that's when it should rain because people are not out anyway. Nothing to do with the demon. The demon is another effect of the fact that people are not there anyway, and that's why Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa made that deal. But the fact that that's a good night for rain is directly because people don't go out that night on that night anyway. But Rashi and Tosafot imply that no, the cause and effect are switched. The whole reason people don't go out on Friday night and Tuesday night is because they're afraid of these mazikim. Vitzarachim.